is a show with Jane Kaiser on the rights of the victims of the mental health system.
Mary Lee Curtis. And today we explore the PIRC, P-I-R-C, which is an acronym for Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective. PIRC was formed in 1975 by UCSC students in community studies who were concerned about abuse in the mental health system. They want to educate the public regarding this allegation of abuse in the mental health system, and further, they want to promote the civil rights and liberties of those institutionalized patients. And they want to focus on creating alternatives to the current system. Today we have Bonnie Schell, who is editor of the Alternative Report, a Santa Cruz newsletter. And Bonnie is also on the Public Policy Committee for California Network of Mental Health Clients. Jane Kaiser, a longtime member of PIRC, is a paralegal mental patient rights advocate. Welcome to you both. Does this about sum up your organization's goals and objectives? Have I gotten it right, or is there anything I should add in there?
That's pretty much it. To inform the public about psychiatric abuses and assaults, past, present, and possibly future. And there's other goals that we would like to set up alternatives that are client-directed that would not involve the present therapies of psychiatry.
I notice you have a hand-lettered sweatshirt on there that says Psychiatry Kills. You really don't like psychiatry at all. Is it just Freudian psychiatry or all psychiatry?
I don't know how to differentiate Freudian psychiatry from psychiatry. The statement that psychiatry kills comes from the fact that the side effects of the present treatment of neuroleptic drugs, one of the side effects is sudden death. Another is neuromalignant syndrome, which the person is dead within 3 days. And another side effect of the psychiatric drugs is
tardive dyskinesia.
Well, that too. But as far as death, it's produces suicidal tendencies. So those are the three death type of
fairly scary scenarios there.
Yeah, Freud was actually a psychoanalyst. I mean, when we talk about psychiatry, we're talking about a biomedical kind of psychiatry that Freud knew nothing about. I mean, nobody's on the couch anymore.
About the only thing he knew about back in those days was cocaine.
Yeah. Right, which that was his own drug of choice. I don't know that he passed it out to his patients and wrote them a prescription for it, right?
Well, I remember back when Governor Ronald Reagan closed most of the state mental hospitals. It was about the time that your group was founded, or somewhere around that time frame, perhaps a bit earlier. Patients were released and sent back to the community to be served by the mental health systems in the various counties. Since then, more and more people have been, from my casual observation, on the streets and unable to care for themselves. How do you folks view the closing of the state mental hospitals that Governor Reagan did so many years ago?
I'd like to address that. Deinstitutionalization was supposed to go along with detoxification, and this county is, and many, many other. In fact, there's no detoxification programs in any county in Santa Cruz, in California, that I know of.
You mean detoxification
from the psychiatric drugs?
Okay.
That was supposed to go along with the institutionalization and hasn't. And the people that, well, actually, what you're seeing after the people get out of the state institutions and local institutions are the effects of the treatment that psychiatry has dealt to them. And the public wasn't forewarned that these people would be in the grips of tardive dyskinesia, which is a disease that is permanent and irreversible. and it's a steady shaking of the and involuntary movements as the psychiatric drugs destroy the nerve and muscle portions of the brain controlling them.
The number here is 479-1080, and we're here today with Jane Kaiser and Bonnie Schell of the Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective. If you have any questions for these people, call us at 479-1080. Now, I see here quite a bit of emphasis in your literature regarding psychiatric drugs, as a great deal of their space is taken up with that question, or that position, I should say. Do you have a list of drugs you consider to be appropriate? The ones that you consider to be inappropriate, it's quite long. Are there any drugs whatsoever that pass your standards for safety, effectiveness, and side effects?
I think where psychiatric drugs in their use are different from any other drug, in other words, many of the drugs for blood pressure and to lower your cholesterol are toxic if given in the wrong dose. The difference between you as a patient, if you're a heart patient or if you're supposed to have a mental illness, is that if you go into your doctor and say, I have trouble walking down the steps and I can't have sexual intercourse with my wife anymore, and I have terrible headaches, the doctor is going to pay attention to you and lower the dose and work with you. And at some point, you have the right to say, the side effects of this heart medication aren't worth my taking it, doc. And he's going to say, that's a decision you have the right to make. And you can actually die from your heart disease. Okay, let's suppose the doctor thinks you're obsessive compulsive. First of all, you're not going to die from it, and neither is anybody else. But you're not granted, the doctor's not apt to listen to you. If you complain about the drugs, then it's seen as a symptom of either that you're paying too much attention to yourself, that you're non-compliant, that you're paranoid. So you lose your sort of right to speak. And in fact, the dose may be raised rather than lowered. So it's not that, it's the use of the drugs, it's that the patient and doctor don't work together, that psychiatry sets itself up on a higher pedestal than probably any other medical profession.
But the question was, are there any drugs that meet your standards, your organization's standard for safety, effectiveness, and side effects? Are there any psychiatric drugs out there, any drugs that will meet your standards for helping people with a mental problem or a perceived mental problem?
Well, as far as
I'm... Perceived by the patient or by the inmate,
yeah,
as you call them.
As far as I'm concerned, I go along with psychiatrist Dr. Richmond, who says, you know, it's people, not pills, that are going to help. And there's so many horrendous side effects with every psychiatric drug that I've ever read about or know about that to your question, I'd say no.
I would part from Jane slightly on that, and then I think some neuroleptics can be helpful there, and then for shaking and tremors, there are other drugs that help on a short-term basis.
What's a neuroleptic?
Neuroleptic drugs would be like Prolixin, Thorazine, Stelazine, Novane. They operate on the neurotransmitter centers of your brain. They're now using a lot of drugs that were originally used for epilepsy in an experimental basis, Tegretol, valproic acid.
If I recall correctly, the anticipation 20 years ago was that Thorazine and that whole family of drugs, the hydrochlorides, were going to be something that would allow people to resume their lives back in the community,
right?
Because it would constitute essentially care without walls. Has this promise of a bright future gone awry? Top of your list.
Care without walls has come to be a liquid lobotomy. In other words, the person may cause no trouble to anyone, but the person also can no longer have a creative thought. The person can only do A to B to C kind of things. It's like having cement in your head. And after you've taken that, you know, 3 or 4 or 6 or 8 years, and at the time those drugs were introduced, the idea that people would take those over a lifetime was not conceived of.
Well, wasn't that, in effect, the basis of Ronald Reagan's decision to close down the hospitals, that there were these drugs available which would do the job without the walls?
Yes.
Well, if those drugs have failed, do you now advocate that we rebuild those walls and perhaps put some people back inside of them?
No.
No, not at all.
I don't think anyone deserves to be in a mental institution.
Okay. I also see that you're very much opposed to the use of electroshock therapy. Are there ever any circumstances where this would be acceptable to you?
If you look up the literature on epilepsy, they propose a whole bunch of drugs that have high risk simply to keep an epileptic from never having another epileptic seizure because of the brain damage that it causes. So it's hard to conceive of an argument that you would induce a seizure. They happen to look nice now because they give lots of muscle, sedatives so that the person doesn't, break any bones and they don't break their teeth, and they give small doses. And in Santa Cruz, we ship people to San Jose to have it done so that our hands look really nice and clean. And the person comes back with with memory loss and feels fine, because there's a sense of euphoria to any damage to the brain. If I hit you in the head with a rock, you will tell me that it feels pleasant. I mean, that's been well documented. The brain protects itself, so any damage to the brain does not cause pain.
Well, isn't one legitimate use for electroshock therapy in the bipolars who are stuck in the manic phase and they can't quite get them out?
I've never heard of it used for that. I thought they used it for extreme depression that didn't respond to anything.
Okay, maybe got a caller who's a little more knowledgeable than I am.
Okay.
On line four, we have Vernon from SoCal. Hi, Vernon. What would you like to talk to these ladies
about? Two things. I wanted to address one of your comments first, though, Harry.
Yes, sir.
Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Is everybody wants to ignore one thing about the institutions in the early 70s?
Mm-hmm.
In part, there was a California congressman, the Lannerman-Petras Short Act was passed, which says you could not hold someone against their will. And most of the closing of the mental institutions, I know in Southern California where I live, Patton State Hospital, was a result that people started leaving on their own. And since funding is fundamentally a function of how many inmates you got, it just got to the point there was nobody to keep them open for. So that your comment about Reagan closing them is only partially accurate.
You know, that was a big story, Vernon, on the front page of the newspaper for quite a while. I can't believe I got the facts wrong on that. I seem to recall Governor Reagan saying it was a budget-cutting measure. You saying it was a result of a lawsuit?
No, what I'm saying was a result...
Or legislation?
No, what I'm saying, it was a result of when the legislation was passed that you could not keep inmates in against their own will. You know, in other words...
This went through the legislature at Governor Reagan's steering committee, didn't it?
Well, no, I am not all that up on all that. But anyway, there's some question as to whether Reagan turned them all out. But the other thing that I wanted to bring up regarding drugs...
Yes, sir.
There's very few drugs that I know of, even if you're a diabetic or if you're a heart patient or whatever, that are taken for, long periods of time that are good for the body. If you've got to be on heart medication for life, that's also not very good, and there are some side effects and after effects. And so the question is it ever possible that the side effects are preferable to the consequences? Because I know that with schizophrenics, and I've talked to psychiatrists, I know quite a few of them, the prognosis for a schizophrenic is not very good, and many of them can function fairly well, I guess, on lithium, I've been told.
No.
And
that's for a manic depressive, I believe.
Well, I've got my drugs wrong. And I honestly admit that. But the question is if medication makes a person functional in society and they're not functional without it, what would you recommend?
Well, ladies, what do you think?
I've taken medication at times, and I'm on medication now at a level that I can tolerate in order to do the things I want to do, but it's under my own free will. I mean, I'm not under the county mental health system, and I'm not under a case management system or living in any kind of sheltered place where somebody says I must take X or I can't, stay there or I must.
You don't particularly sound schizophrenic to me, but I'm not an expert on schizophrenia.
That's what I was diagnosed at age 18.
Huh?
That's what I was diagnosed at age 18.
And you're functioning in society on the dosages you take. So you take it when you need it and you don't when you don't.
No, it doesn't work that way. There's a rebound effect if you stop taking medication. I mean, I've taken it for, like 6 years and then been off of it for 10 or 12 and then been on another medication for a period of time.
So that you're, what you're saying is that there is a legitimate place in the realm of mental health for medication.
Well, we have a split decision here. Jane says no, and Bonnie says in some cases. Their literature, I will tell you, Vernon, their literature is quite black and white on this and leaves very little room for Bonnie's position that there are some uses for it. What I saw in the literature was a very any medication stance in the letters and the articles.
Well, certainly if you can do without medication, period, I would certainly ascribe to that. And the other part about literature, Harry Lee.
Yes, sir.
Is if you're in the world of science anyway, scientists have violent debates about everything.
They sure do.
And
some of them don't even think there's an ozone hole up there.
That's right. And depending on who you read and the evidence you read, you can make strong cases for either one, as was the case at the turn of the century, when quantum mechanics was in a terrible battle with classical physics. You know, there were just violent arguments about that. So I don't doubt that the stuff you got is very black and white, and without reading it myself and seeing how the studies was done, I can't really tell you what
it is. But, Vernon, in actuality, here's a case where the drugs that are promoted and used by, well, I won't say promoted, used by, dispensed by psychiatry is not treated the way regular science is. There is very little debate because the American Psychiatric Association and the magazines and all the perks given to psychiatrists are sponsored by the drug companies, which if you look at the Fortune 500 are in the top 20 in our country. While other American companies are losing money, the drug companies are making enormous amounts of money.
Well, that almost sounds like one of Harry Lee's conspiracy theories.
It could go. There's a lot of conspiracy stuff.
Everybody's out to get everybody and be self-serving.
Well,
and self-interested.
Some of them are succeeding.
Huh? Well, you know, if you talk, you know, this is nuts, though. If you talk in the society, on one hand, you get people say, let us take what we want. You know, in Canada, you can get Laetrile or Mexico or whatever. And then on the other hand, people turn around and they don't like it when things are prescribed or whatever, and they ask to get experimental drugs on the market in one hand, and then they find out they're no good, and they complain. So I think we still need to all pull together.
I hear you loud and clear, Vernon. We got West Side Al. I'm going to see what he's got to say. Thanks
that
very much for
perfect.
Your call, sir.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Hello, Al. Welcome.
Hey, Harry. How you doing?
I'm very well today, sir. Thank you for asking.
Well, I know you have a lot of experience in this area of counseling people of substance abuse. At least you've said so in the past.
Yeah, substance abuse is a little different than mental illness. But,
well, a lot of the people that are engaging in self-medication probably could benefit from some of the other treatments. But I thought perhaps I would share a story with you today about a friend of mine who I haven't seen in a number of years, but I met back in the late 60s, who was sort of a product of the prison system. If I could take a minute or two to relate this tale to you.
We've got 5 minutes to the break.
Well, fine. That's plenty of time. This young man was in high school in San Diego and started working with the police department as a snitch, basically turning in fellow students for drug purchases and other such nefarious activities. And then at some point in his snitch career, he indulged in some marijuana and had a sort of a reawakening and decided he didn't really want to do that anymore. And of course, at that age, people's temperament is pretty volatile and tendency to change is pretty predominant. So he, you know, tried to withdraw from the situation, and he encountered some opposition from the police officers that he was working with. And later on down the road, about 9 months or so, he sold some marijuana to a fellow high school student and was arrested for sales to a minor. Now, he was about a month or two over 18, and the guy he sold to was a couple of months under.
And that's a quick five, isn't it?
Yeah, and they threw him to the mercy of his defense attorney, threw him to the mercy of the court, waived his rights, and pretty much he got railroaded into Soledad. And on entering Soledad as a nice, young, tender piece of meat, he was exposed to an attempted rape by some inmates and ended up taking a knife away from one of them and stabbing the guy to death.
Now he's got another 25 or 30.
Yeah, they put him on trial for that, and it ended up that he was found self-defense, but the prison put him on a silent beef and put him in solitary confinement for 6 months at the age of 18. And when he came out, it was 1969, and Soledad was going through the race riot situation. And he got involved in some of that and was declared to be just totally criminally insane, and they sent him to Vacaville after shooting at him and clubbing him and all this stuff. So he spent some time in Vacaville under shock treatment for about 2.5 years, and then was put back into San Quentin, where he managed somehow to take his first LSD experience. And I met him on the streets of Berkeley about 1968 after all this, and he'd undergone extensive electric shock treatment. And he was one of the most paranoid, violent, maladjusted people I've ever met in my life. And if I had to say that there was a counter-testimonial to anything the prison system could do for somebody, this was the guy.
Well, it doesn't sound like this story is going to shock these women. They're not going, oh, my God, that's awful. I've got a feeling they've heard stories like this over and over. How about it?
Well, there's a case, I mean, there's a trial pending right now, and I'm trying to think of the man's name, who's a man who was on death row who asked for the right not to take psychiatric medication. He said he'd rather die. And the doctors are claiming he must be in perfect mental health before he dies, right? And so he took court. He lost the first round. I mean, you know, do you have due process rights or not?
Is this the man in Louisiana or somewhere down south that they're going to give drugs to bring back to sanity just before they kill him?
You got it.
Oh, my God.
But I think there's another court case pending in California that's similar.
Well, in all fairness, I will say that all societies throughout time, and I know this from my reading, have always had a taboo. I mean, a real ritual tribal taboo against executing people who are mentally ill. So I don't really consider that story to be that hideous, but it is kind of ironic that you have to make them sane before you can kill them.
Well, on the other end of the extreme, we have Socrates, who was forced to drink hemlock for the simple crime of teaching the children to think for themselves.
Another conspiracy. Thanks, Al.
We'll see you, Harry.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Hi, Fred. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Well, going back, the reason why they let people out of the hospital was it was done under Reagan's administration. The Democrats had passed it, and it happened during Reagan's administration, but the thing with Ronald Reagan is he didn't give the local communities the resources to take care of the folks when they were out of the hospitals, and then it got put on local communities, and now it's been that way. Now they're going to make it official with the realignment, and I was thinking about the time I was on psychiatric drugs, and I didn't see it do anything for me other than create more psychological problems.
Well, that scenario you put forth with Governor Reagan is the way I recall it. Fred, we're going to have to take a little break and see what's going on with the CNN news out there in the real world. I'm wondering if you would like to hold on through the break.
Sure.
All right, I'll put you on hold, and we'll be back with Fred to see what else he's got to say about his experiences with drugs and the psychiatric system. Presents. The number here is 479-1080, 479-1080. We're here with Bonnie Schell, editor of the Alternative Report. It's a Santa Cruz newsletter, and she's also on the Public Policy Committee for California Network of Mental Health Clients. And with Jane Kaiser, she's a paralegal, mental patient rights advocate, and a longtime member of PIRC, PERC. Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective. And we're on the phone right now with Fred in Felton. Hi, Fred. You still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I'd also like to think, going back to the times I was hospitalized, but recently, the only way I was able to get out is I fake being sane, and that's...
Well, isn't that what we all do, Fred?
I know. That's but most people...
Maybe we've hit on something here.
Yeah, that's right. When you rebel against them, they'll label you crazy and keep you in, then say you're sick and totally and dismiss you as a human being. The only thing I was able to do is just pretend that I was sane, and then they let me out saying, what is he doing here?
So you got out. Did you get your handful of pills and get referred to the county mental health system?
Not at the time I was hospitalized, but I did go through the system a couple of times and did get pills. But like I stated, the pills did not do anything for me. In fact, after I went off the pills a couple of days later, I got all these anxieties that I never had before since I left the mental health system. And that was a couple of days, and then boom, years after, I've never had any problems. I feel that the medication does cause psychological problems, and that's why is there is a relapse of people who end up back in the institutions, and I would like to have your two guests comment about it.
Who would like to handle that one?
Yeah, there's certainly effects from the drugs, and one real warning is after you've been on psychiatric drugs for a while, it's very dangerous to just stop them all at once. You have to go through a real slow withdrawal process in withdrawing from the drugs.
Barbiturates are another one that you don't withdraw from quickly and easily.
It's the same thing. Anything that affects the nervous system, there's a rebound effect.
Mm-hmm.
Are there resources in the community that helps people?
Absolutely none.
They claim no detox centers for psychiatric drugs.
I think that is very sad to hear that.
Couldn't you guys just go down to, mental health facility at Dominican Hospital and get some help detoxing down there from psychiatric drugs? I'm asking my guests, not you, Fred, but you can hang on there.
First, you have to go through a crisis worker who decides whether you're going to stay there or they kick you out. Probably they kick you out. If they decided to keep you, maybe we should try that.
I just,
as a test case, okay?
Yeah, I don't
think so.
I don't feel there's any psychiatrists in Santa Cruz County that are willing to do the detoxification care that's needed.
Well, you'd be putting them out of business since they won't be able to prescribe the drugs. And they think that they've been told that the drugs are the way to solve people's problems. And it totally goes against the anti-drug message that the feds are giving us about illegal drugs and stuff.
See, Santa Cruz is in a special situation in that we have one mental health main hospital, one locked ward. And the doctors do not work for Dominican. They work for the Monterey Bay Psychiatric something or other. In other words, it's a contract group who've been there since 83. So most people walking around in Santa Cruz got their first prescriptions from that group of doctors who I was told by one person in the legal system here are pretty high up. They only make two diagnoses, and they only have four case health plans that are Xeroxed, and they're just handed out to everybody. They're supposed to have, you know, sit down and talk to you about what your plans are for your life and how they can help you. So there's, if there needs to be a right to choice in Santa Cruz, I'd like to say that it's in the treatment of people with mental distress. We have no choice.
Fred, we have other calls. I'm going to have to say thanks very much for calling in. I hope you'll listen to this show and call in again in the future.
Thank you.
And Robert in Santa Cruz. Hello, Robert.
Hi. How's it going?
Very well, sir. And yourself?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. Luckily, not on psychiatric drugs.
All right. What questions do you have or comments?
I'm wondering what reforms your guests feel are needed, both locally and nationally, in terms of psychiatric inmates and the abuses they're currently subjected to. And I'd also like to know what kind of abuses locally have they found most dramatic and most oppressive for psychiatric inmates, and also what kind of reading material they recommend to listeners to educate themselves on the problems. And finally...
What's your favorite one of those? How about the what needs to be done question? Can we tackle that one? Who would like to do that one? What needs to be done at the local level and the state level and perhaps even nationally? Anybody want to tackle that one?
I'll hit two things. First of all, the legal system needs to get rid of the insanity plea, which would take psychiatry off of its pedestal and get rid of psychiatry out of the courtroom as expert witnesses, and they'd just be normal doctors like everybody else. And then people in mental hospitals wouldn't be subject to the whim of people who really are dangerous, which mental patients aren't. in Santa Cruz, we need alternatives. If someone is going through a crisis, especially their first psycho-spiritual crisis, they don't need to be in a locked ward where nothing happens to them except that they get medication. Do not think that therapy ever happens anymore. You're just in a cold room with a twin bed and somebody comes in and says, did you make up your bed and put your medicine out for you? I mean, it is not, nothing good for your soul is going to happen. We need alternatives that would be like a safe house where there are people who've been through the same thing who could help you. And believe me, it would be less expensive.
Have you given thoughts to organizing such a safe house yourself?
There have been two or three, in Santa Cruz before, and there have been some in the rest of the country. The problem is money. The National Institute for Mental Health does not give grants to things that don't have staff, professional people on them, and you can't get the backing of the mental health system to back you unless you want a lot of professionals on the staff, and that's the whole point, is not to have a lot of professionals on the staff. So we haven't.
Maybe you need some countercultural backing or some rich leftists or something like that.
Yes, that would be good. Rich leftists with a house.
According to their literature, they're well into the counterculture. I thank you for your call, Robert. I appreciate it. We have a lot of ground to cover here. I get the feeling that you two don't really think that there is anything such as mental illness. Is this?
Well, I personally go along with Dr. Saz, and he's on his book, The Myth of Mental Illness. I do not think there is such a thing as mental illness.
Are we into a plot here to take away people's civil rights needlessly?
No, I don't think anything about a plot. I think that through the psychobabble of the years, they've convinced the public that there is such a thing as mental illness and that they are the ones to make people mentally healthy. There are two main diagnoses they give people, schizophrenic or manic depressive, or manic depressive is also called bipolar, and sometimes the patients get both diagnoses. The abuses, as I see them inside mental institutions that Robert wanted us to talk about, was the whole thing that you can confine a person against their will and they have done nothing wrong. And this is what the LPS Act did. It said that you can lock up a person for 72 hours on certain conditions, and that didn't have anything to do with them doing anything against the law. And then the treatment that goes on while you are locked up in a mental institution is that you are often put in solitary and restrained with very tight leather straps, that your pants are pulled down and you are injected with a very powerful neuroleptic, which takes away your ability to speak, think, walk. Electroshock is legal throughout the United States and many other countries and is becoming more popular. So the torture...
Well, let me just draw to your attention and to the audience's attention. There used to be a fellow that, I don't know if they called him Sundog or what, but he would stand downtown and point at the sun and mumble incoherently and pick lint out of the air. Now, everybody that I saw, they assumed this fellow had a mental condition. What are we to assume when someone says there really isn't such a thing, that it doesn't exist? I've seen so many examples in my own experience of people who were so far outside the mainstream. I'm not talking about some silly artist or, somebody doing something to shock or offend on purpose or something like that, but people who obviously were not able to take care of themselves, who had gone so far outside of the bounds of what society calls normal behavior that they have to be called something.
But is it a disease?
I don't know. I really don't know.
my feeling is that...
You used to consider it some kind of a sinful condition.
Possession.
We've come beyond that, you know. We've gone beyond blaming the person and tried to blame a disease. Now you want to get it away from all labels entirely here. I don't quite understand. I know that there are situations out there that do exist. There are people who need to be protected and to be protected against.
Okay, my idea is that this person you described probably was a survivor of psychiatric assault and abuse. That if you found out what his prehistory to when you saw him on the street was, that he had been indeed probably been in a psychiatric hospital, quote unquote, and that because of the treatment, the therapy given to that person, that is why the person acted that way. These drugs take away your reasoning power. They damage so much of your body and mind that, you know, you can't blame it on the disease. I have one friend of mine.
These people were around long before Thorazine.
Thorazine came out in like the 1940s.
Well, it wasn't prescribed widely until the 70s.
But maybe he had had a lobotomy. Maybe he'd been electroshocked.
We got a caller on line 4 named John. He wants to talk. He says something about right to refuse treatment. Hello, John. What can you tell us today?
I don't want to get into my own particular story. I've had encounters with the mental health, so-called mental health system, and but I'd like to point out that with regard to the right to refuse, nobody really has the right to refuse psychiatric treatment. And I think that if it were possible, the greatest reform that could, if it were possible, is like a fable in a way, to eliminate involuntary so-called psychiatric treatment and allow a person to choose alternatives and fund those alternatives run by people who have had the experiences of hearing voices, seeing visions, the depths of utter nothingness and the heights of elation and so on, allow the people who've had those kinds of experiences and who've learned to live with them peacefully in our communities, and there are those of us who are that way, and without psychiatric drugs and against indeed the will of the psychiatric bureaucracy, allow us to have our alternatives funded. I would like to pose the question whether or not a person would want to go to a person who had only read books about driving a car and proposed to tell you how to drive a car. Would you go to Mario Andretti? We are the people who have had those experiences. We know how to live in the community. We know how to help our fellow people, our peers who are having these kinds of experiences. The psychiatrists, they've never had these experiences. They write books, repeat quotations, and they don't know what they're talking about. They sit around and theorize. We've had the experiences. That's especially the emphasis I'd like to talk about, especially those things.
Okay, John, I think we get your story. Let's let these ladies respond to you. Anything to say to John?
Well, I agree with him completely. That's what we're hoping that could be done.
There's no justification for involuntary treatment.
Okay, so we have a whole bunch of agreement, and we're going to let it go with that. Thanks very much for your call, John.
Can I add one more thing?
Yes, sir.
Don't mind?
Yes, sir.
A certain aspect of having these strange experiences is that in other cultures and other times, especially American, even in American Indian culture at this time, there are people who have these kinds of experiences, are supported in their culture, are not outcasts of their culture. They're supported when they're having the experiences, and they indeed go out and search for them on vision quests, as American Indians I know do. That could well be an integrated experience in our culture if and when it becomes understood that with respect to our experiences and the psychiatric drug industry, it's not a matter of a conspiracy. It's just that we are profitable products
Got your message,
of their devising.
I understand. We got to go. Thanks very much for your call.
Bye.
Well, we're having a lively discussion here. You can join in. The number is 479-1080. We have to go do a little commercial business, and we'll be right back after this.
Hi, Michael Zwirling, real estate broker. You know, a wise man once told me there's always a market for unique ocean view property. In my experience, I found that to be true, even in the lackluster local real estate market of the last 2 years. While it's certainly true that sellers of ordinary run-of-the-mill properties have to be willing to deal to move their real estate these days, the fact is, the market for local high-end properties, those of $1 million and up, is as robust as ever, and perhaps even more so. Several million-dollar-plus local homes have sold recently. So whether you're financially well-endowed or of more modest means, I believe now is the time to buy. For there is no more secure long-term investment than real estate. Why do you think it's called real estate? Call Michael Zwirling Investments for help. Our number is 429-1777. Be smart. Buy now, before, not after it goes up and up and up and up.
Hi, everybody. This is Tom Snyder, hoping you'll join me tonight and every night on the radio show live from 7 to 10 p.m. on your conversation leader, KSCO. On the radio show, we have the latest news and information about the important stories that shape our lives. Then the lighter side, often with the biggest and brightest stars in the entertainment world. And as always, you can join us on the toll-free line. Join me on the radio show with Tom Snyder at 7 here on your conversation leader, KSCO.
Welcome back to KSCO Presents. I'm Harry Lee Curtis, and we've been having a discussion here with the two representatives from Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective, and they have a couple of things they would like to say to you out there regarding phone numbers, addresses, and reading lists. So if you would like to get on with that, folks can get their pencils and papers ready and find out what it is to read and where to go for some kind of assistance here.
Yeah, we'll be glad to send you a bibliography starting with the first books about the self-help patients movement. And just send a self-addressed stamped envelope to PIRC, P-I-R-C, P.O. Box 299, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And if you're interested in the pros and cons about drugs, there's a new hardback book out by Dr. Peter Bragan called Toxic Psychiatry, and the publisher is Morrow.
Oh, and
anything from you?
I'd like to add about the state institutions closing down. There are still many, many people in the state institutions, and NAPA is the one that Santa Cruz sends its people too, and I think there's like 45 people up there, and Napa is a horrendous
Napa is unaccredited and has been for the past, I think, 6 years, and we're still sending people there. Why don't we put pressure on Napa to shape up rather than take our money and our Santa Cruz residents? I don't know. We just don't choose to.
And the LPS Act, the Lanterman Petras Short Act, did not stop people from being involuntarily committed. Many, many people are in institutions against their will. Did you want to say something about blank?
Well, let me ask you a question. Maybe that'll jog it. I see that in your literature you seem to be very much on the side of the mental health workers, but very much opposed to those in charge of the programs. Is this a fair statement of your group's goals, or not your goals, but a fair statement of your position on...
I'm opposed to clients, consumers, and users not being on all committees that set policy that affect clients and consumers. I'd like to see a day when the mental health system maybe doesn't exist at all, but it does exist now, and it certainly needs input from clients. And while they use terms like client-driven and self-help and we have your best interest at heart, ultimately that's not really what, you know, is happening.
Do you think...